An aerial view soars toward New York City, where sunlit skyscrapers rise into a partly cloudy sky. In a bustling office, a clock on the wall advances from 9 o'clock to 9:01. A lanky man enters and frowns at the clock, which is connected to a time card machine. Noticing him, a balding manager steps out of his cubicle, his eyes fixed on the lanky man, who punches his time card, then strides into the office.
Good morning, Baxter. Nice of you to join us. Office hours start at 9, you know.
Yeah, I know that, Mr. Brothers, but I missed my bus and then the taxi.
And we would appreciate it if you would take care of your personal affairs on your own time.
What?
Carruthers gestures across the room. The tardy employee knits his brow and approaches a white-haired man sitting by a desk with a file in his lap.
Morning. Mr. Baxter?
Yes.
John Sylvester Baxter?
Yes.
My name is Fowler. I'm with the legal firm of Voorhees, Buckner & Voorhees.
All right, look, if it's about that overdue bill at LaFrance...
Would you mind telling me your mother's maiden name?
Pelton, Judith Pelton. I can explain that. You see, I didn't pay
that. I'm afraid I have some bad news for you.
You're not going to sue. I mean, the bill is not that much.
Jacob Barnsworth died.
I'm sorry to hear that, but... Who?
Jacob Nash Barnsworth, your great uncle on your mother's side.
Oh, yeah.
As far as we can determine, you're the next of kin, therefore heir to the estate.
I'm the heir to the Jacob Nash... Uncle Jacob? Exactly what did I...
The principal asset is the Grand Imperial Hotel.
Grand Imperial Hotel?
It's in Silver Hill, Colorado. It's small, just 25 rooms. But it must be a sound operation. Oh, there's a letter here to Voorhees Sr. You know, he handled all of Mr. Barnsworth's affairs, mentioning that the hotel has been taking in over $14,000 a month.
John gapes.
Every month?
Mm-hmm. If you like, Mr. Baxter, our office can handle the transfer of title, recording the deed, and, Mr. Baxter.
John meets his gaze.
Huh? Let me get something straight now. You have just told me that I am the owner of the Grand Imperial Hotel in
Silver Hill, Colorado.
Silver Hill, Colorado?
Lock, stock, and bar. the keys. Oh, and here's a letter from a Mr. Ridgway up there expressing interest in the property. If you decide you want to sell out.
Sell out? I don't know. You said $14,000. A month.
Mm-hmm. We'll start the legal machinery going and keep in touch. Goodbye, Mr. Baxter. And congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
The men shake hands, and John sinks into his chair, mouthing, $14,000. His eyes shift thoughtfully as he glances around the office. John pockets a business card, then hurriedly folds up some legal documents and tucks them inside his suit jacket. He gathers items off his desk, then, carrying his briefcase under his arm, dons his hat, grabs his overcoat, and walks away.
Everybody?
John puts his fingers in his mouth.
Friends and fellow workers, it is with mixed emotions that I tell you I am leaving Indemnity and Casualty. After 11 years, however, I couldn't go without telling you it's been a privilege working with you, all of you. There are a few, however, I'd like to single out for special recognition, my personal stapler. I want to give to that man who has logged more hours at the water cooler and managed to survive, Jim Cullen, Mr. Water Cooler himself.
There you go, Jim. John holds up scissors.
The Silver Shears Award goes to George Maul because he demonstrated exceptional courage and ingenuity last year at the Christmas party when he cut off Mr. Carruthers' tie. Keep up the good work, George. Beverly Boxer. The Outstanding Achievement Award, my staple remover, goes to that person who has demonstrated that she can contribute the most to office morale. Miss Boxer, I think I can say without fear of contradiction that you have the greatest legs in this office, if not on the whole 40th floor. Hey! They have been a distraction. They have caused man hours wasted, but they've made life here bearable.
They kiss on the cheek.
What's going on here?
I'm giving my farewell address to the troops, Mr. Carruthers.
You're leaving?
Yes, Mr. Carruthers, I'm leaving. But I think it's only fitting and proper that I return my computer cards from whence they came. unfolded, unspindled, and unmutilated.
He shoves cards into a big computer.
Owie!
He slams a switch and papers fly out. Carruthers tries to catch them. At the door, John slams his time card into the machine. A grinning man applauds as John opens the door and waves goodbye. Carruthers flails as shooting papers hit him in the face. In a living room, a woman stares in shock.
You quit!
John looks from his wife to his stunned kids. A blonde teenage girl runs out of the room.
What's the matter with her?
You quit!
Quit? Oh, did I quit? It was beautiful.
Your job. You quit your job so we could move where?
To Silver Hill, Colorado.
Where's Silver Hill, Colorado?
It's in Wyoming.
Richard, maybe you'd better go to your room.
Mom, what does this got to do with sex?
Richard!
The red-haired boy leaves, and John paces with his hands in his pockets.
Johnny, you have invested 11 years with that company.
Yes, 11 years. And in that time, I've moved up three rows, from accounts receivable to accounts payable. Honey, I feel like I've been digging myself into a hole, and today somebody threw me a rope.
Do you mean you're just going to give up everything and drag your family off into the wilderness?
Well, what? Honey, I am taking over as the owner and the proprietor of the Grand Imperial Hotel. Does that sound like a wilderness? Susie, this is an opportunity that comes to few men in their lifetimes. To stand on your own two feet and to discover your own individuality in a world where we're all becoming...
Johnny turns to see his wife's empty chair, then eyes a St. Bernard. The big dog pants at him.
In a world where we're all becoming holes punched in a card.
The dog sneaks away.
I want to get out of this smudge pot. Get out to where the sky's blue and the air is clear and...
Realizing he's all alone, Johnny slouches as he exhales a heavy breath, then strides down the hall and eyes the closed doors.
Okay. Okay. Run out if you want to, but this family is moving to Silver Hill, Colorado.
On a snowy road, a station wagon with luggage on the roof tows a trailer into a small town. The car passes a big wooden sign, Silver Hill, motherlode city of the Gunnison Range. A title appears, Snowball Express. On a plowed road, the station wagon rolls past rustic buildings with white rooftops. A man wearing a winter hat and parka trudges through a snowbank and crosses the street. Under a steely gray sky, a mountain stippled with evergreen trees slopes above the town. As the station wagon tootles away, a big black dog crosses the street. In the business district, the station wagon travels down a straight, snow-covered road, with cars parked parallel to storefronts. A traveling view from inside the car looks out at houses with mounding snowdrifts in the front yards. A white church with a snow-dusted steeple sits back from the road, and a crusty plow ridge turns a corner, edging a street that leads past the church into a barren landscape. Icicles hang down from the eave of a roof, obscuring the view as the station wagon rolls by. Another plow ridge blocks the first-story windows of a building standing next to the stone jailhouse. In the station wagon, the kids ride in the back, while Johnny sits behind the wheel. Next to him, Susie shakes her head.
I don't see any hotel.
Maybe we're in the wrong part of town.
Only one part of town. We're almost out of that. Maybe I'll better ask somebody.
The station wagon rolls further into town and pulls off the snowy road, stopping by a pair of fuel pumps. Outside the gas station, two attendants stand by a tire rack. One of them holds a steaming wet inner tube over a vat. Wearing a letterman's jacket and a plaid red hat with ear flaps, he sets the inner tube down and steps over to the driver's side of the station wagon.
Hi. Folks from New York?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I could tell by your license plate.
We're looking for the Grand Imperial Hotel.
Huh?
The Grand Imperial Hotel.
Never heard of it.
Well, this is Silver Hill, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And you don't know the Grand Imperial?
No, and I've lived here all my life.
What's going on?
Oh, Double L, these folks are looking for the... What did you call it? The Grand what?
Imperial. It's a hotel.
It might be one of them new places up to Crystal Highlands.
No. This is supposed to be in Silver Hill.
There's a Silver Hill in Wyoming.
See, Dad?
This hotel was owned by the late Jacob Barnsworth.
Jacob Barnsworth? Crazy Jake.
Well, he's dead.
Well, I know that.
If it's Crazy Jake's place you're looking for, it's about a mile further out.
You just stay on the same road till you hit the county road.
Turn left along that road till you pass Howard Babcock's place.
Babcock. Is there a sign there or something?
Oh, it blew off.
Then you'll see a couple of four Holsteins on the south side of a red barn.
Babcock told me he was getting some Guernseys. Yeah. He might have got them, Marty.
Red barn, I'll find it.
Now, just past the red barn, you'll hit a chuck hole. Turn left right there, down that road along the fence line. That'll take you smack dab into the hotel.
Thanks.
If the county's plowed the road.
Are you related to Crazy Dick?
Johnny eyes a grizzled man, then starts the car. The station wagon pulls away from the gas station. In the back seat, Richard leans close to his dad.
Are you related to Crazy Jake, Dad?
Let's all keep our eyes open for a red barn.
Johnny anxiously looks around as he drives. The station wagon passes a red barn and turns left. On an unplowed road, the car climbs a hill, following tracks in the packed snow. The trailer bounces behind the station wagon as the car pulls up a driveway to a Gothic building on the crest of a hill. Parked, Johnny swings open the driver's door and slowly gets out, his lips parted and a stunned look on his face. Susie and the kids follow him out of the car. Wearing hats and gloves and winter coats, they all take a few measured steps up the drive. Behind them, snow-capped mountains tower into a gray sky. They stand in front of the station wagon and survey the drab exterior of the hotel. Boards cover the windows, and Susie exchanges a nervous glance with her daughter. Richard knits his brow.
Dad, how bad did you break it off with Mr. Carruthers?
Johnny frowns down at his son, then straightens and walks toward the hotel. As he climbs the snow-covered stairs to the porch, he loses his footing. Bracing himself with his hand, he finds his balance, then climbs onto the porch. Richard follows, along with his mother and sister. Susie's curled blonde hair flows from a black pillbox hat onto her shoulders. Looking around, she sags her shoulders and frowns sadly. Johnny wipes the snow off a window near the front door. Lettering in stained glass reads, Grand Imperial Hotel. Johnny shores a grin.
Well, this is it, all right.
Well, let's see what it looks like inside.
As Johnny pulls a set of keys out of his coat pocket, Richard opens the front door. The boy enters, followed by his parents and his sister. Cobwebs hang from the ceiling, and sheets cover the furniture. Johnny strolls across the dusty floor, glancing at a pile of stuff under a sheet. The legs of an upside-down chair stick out, and dense cobwebs drape from the ceiling.
It's colder inside.
Johnny glances at Susie, who brightens and nods. Her smile fades as she turns away and looks around. Twirling the keys, Johnny paces toward a stone fireplace.
Well... Okay, now, it's going to look a lot better when we get a fire started. See if you can find something to burn, Richard.
Oh, what about one of these chairs?
No, I mean firewood. Look in that box right there.
Okay.
Johnny tries a switch.
Better get the electricity back on.
Dad, shouldn't we find someplace to stay before it gets dark?
We're going
to
stay here.
Overnight?
Well, why not? It's a hotel, isn't it?
Richard opens a chest and a bat flies out.
Just a bat!
Johnny shoos it out the front door and Richard closes it.
Richard.
He opens the door for his father.
Johnny!
In the kitchen, Susie holds a skillet, and her daughter wields a broom.
It's gone. Thing was more scared of us than we were of it.
And that was one scared bat.
Honey, they can't hurt you.
But you know, in South America, they kill whole herds of cattle, and they suck their blood at night.
Richard! Now, that's enough.
The boy clenches his lips, and Johnny paces around.
Hey, this is really a nice big kitchen we've got here, isn't it? Does need a little brightening up.
Susie checks the oven.
What?
There's someone in the oven.
Johnny opens the oven and sees a raccoon family.
Sorry.
What was it?
Raccoons. Four of them.
Will you please tell me how I'm supposed to cook around four raccoons?
Now, honey, don't you worry about it, because I'll get rid of them.
Like you got rid of Stoutheart when Richard brought him home. We'd better get some things out of the car before it gets dark.
Johnny follows Susie as she ushers their daughter away.
We'll give you a hand.
We can manage. Just see if you can find us some place to sleep.
Richard looks up at his dad, who sinks his hands in his coat pockets.
Hey, son, you build a fire, and I'll go upstairs and see if I can find us a place to sleep.
Dad? Hmm? Bears wouldn't hibernate in a place like this, would they?
Bears? No, Richard. Bears wouldn't hibernate in them.
Johnny pauses on the stairs.
How would they get in?
How'd the bats and the raccoons get in?
Johnny shifts his quizzical gaze.
Start the fire, Richard.
The boy turns away, and Johnny warily climbs the stairs. On the second floor, Johnny moves down a hallway. Rumpled rugs snake across the wood floor, and cobwebs hang from the ceiling. Outside, the dog pads through the snow.
You're in this with the rest of us. Come on. Well, come on, Stoutheart. No one's going to carry you.
Johnny steps outside on the balcony.
Hey, come on up here. I want to show you what I found.
A bear?
Richard slams the door and snow falls on his dad.
It's not very funny, Richard.
Johnny heads inside and slams his door. Snow falls off the roof onto his family. Johnny rushes onto the balcony as they brush themselves off.
Now that's funny.
I'm glad you think so.
Hey, lady, you're beautiful when you're angry.
Susie makes a snowball.
You wouldn't.
Wouldn't I?
She pelts him with it.
You're gonna get it now.
The dog stands on a snowbank watching the snowball fight.
Look out there, boy.
Susie beans her husband on the arm. Grinning, he hurls a snowball. Another shot hits Johnny.
Gotcha!
Richard slams into a snowbank as his sister tackles him. Their mom lies in the snow, and they plop next to her. Watching them play, Johnny beams. At night, dull white snow blankets the landscape and covers the roof of the hotel. Inside, Susie jogs down a hallway with a glowing oil lamp, clutching a jacket draped over her nightgown. Wearing a long scarf around her neck, she enters a room and sees the dog in bed with Johnny.
No way!
She pulls the dog out of bed.
Come on. Get off.
I thought you'd appreciate the warm spot.
I'll share yours.
She climbs under the covers.
You're like ice.
Nothing's permanent.
With the quilt pulled up to his chin, he wraps an arm around her, and she snuggles up to him. She studies his downcast face.
Worried?
He nods.
We still have $1,700. It'll stretch a long way.
Johnny glances up at the ceiling. Susie locks her eyes on him.
We still have $1,700, don't we?
The repair to the computer was $130, and the lawyer got $1,000.
Susie sits up. Her mouth hangs open as she stares at him.
You mean for $1,000, we got legally stuck with this clapboard igloo?
Yeah, it's all in his letter. Transfer deed, title search, and a bunch of other stuff.
She slumps back down. The dog lies at the foot of the bed.
Is that the kids?
Johnny shifts his gaze.
Probably the raccoon.
Johnny and Susie sit up.
If that's a raccoon, that's a big raccoon. Take Stoddard out with you.
What I don't need is a 200-pound chicken.
Take him.
Johnny gets out of bed and puts on his jacket over his pajamas.
Okay, Snow King. Come on, you're going with me on your feet.
The dog sits by the bed, panting, as Johnny opens the door. He grabs the dog's collar and tugs him into the hall. Carrying an oil lamp, Johnny pads carefully down the hall with Stoutheart. Johnny looks behind them, then glances downstairs. Dropping to one knee, he listens, and the dog walks away, casting a tall, beastly shadow against the wall. In another hallway, Richard walks in front of his sister, who grips his arm. They see Stoutheart's giant shadow. They take off, and Susie sits up in bed. The dog runs away, bowling over Johnny. Stoutheart jumps into bed with Susie, and she hops out. In the hall, the kids join their dad.
What was it?
I don't know.
It sounds like it's in the kitchen.
Here, you better take this.
Okay.
He hands Susie the oil lamp, then glances at the dog, who hides behind the kids.
Come on, Stoutheart.
Grabbing his collar, Johnny heads downstairs with the dog. As they creep down to the first floor, Susie nods at the kids. On the first floor, Johnny sneaks past the pile of sheet-covered stuff, gripping Stoutheart's collar. The dog lags, and Johnny shoves him.
This way, Stoutheart.
Johnny moves forward, and Stoutheart tries to turn back. Johnny presses an ear against the door. He slowly pushes the door open. In the kitchen, a big arching back covered in fur drops out of sight as Johnny enters. Moving slowly, Johnny walks past a long table with Stoutheart. In the shadows, a hulking silhouette roots through a cabinet as Johnny strides up to a candle on a counter and fiddles with a match. Across the room, a shadowy figure finds a bottle. Johnny lights a candle and sees a gray-bearded man wearing a fur hat and coat holding up a broken bottle.
You horse's caboose, look what you done. It was brand full almost. Stashed you here last summer, just for a night like this. Now there ain't a sniff left. Of all the jingle-brained, you don't know split beans from coffee coming up on a person like that.
Well, what... You're the one that did the scaring. Who are you? What are you doing in my hotel?
Oh, you the new cock-a-doodle-doo around here?
It's my property, yes, if that's what you mean. But who? I'd like to know what some stranger is doing roaming around the kitchen in the middle of the night.
Well, I'm hardly a stranger to this place, mister. Name's Jesse McCord. Jake grubstaked me and let me winter here for 50 years. We was going to split down the middle. Soon as I made my strike.
Yeah, well, okay, that's a lot of things have changed around here now, and if you want to rent a room, I've got plenty of them upstairs.
How much you get for a bed?
Just for yourself?
I'm single and 75. Does that answer your question?
$10.
Oh.
In advance.
In advance?
In advance.
Later, in the foyer with Johnny, Susie watches Jesse tie off a bedroll.
It makes me real happy to see nice folks like yourselves get in this place. It's been like a home to me.
He leans a pair of snowshoes by the door, where Richard lingers with his sister.
Listen at that wind.
Jesse closes the door.
Johnny, maybe you'd better drive him into town.
Why, bless your heart, ma'am. That's awful sweet of you. But no point going into town without no place to stay. No, if I can just find me a holler tree someplace, I'll make out fine.
He opens and closes the door again. Johnny rolls his eyes.
Yeah, that's what she is, all right, a wazia.
What's a wazia?
Wazia is engine for a cold wind that comes sweeping down off in the mountains and freeze a body solid, just like that. Lost me a partner to a wazia once. He went out to check his mule. Wasn't gone more than 30 seconds. Time I got to him and that mule was froze together. Looked like one of them pioneer statues you see.
Well, how come you didn't freeze?
If you ain't bright as a button. Well, now I'll tell you why.
He had a pint of antifreeze in his radiator.
That's about the size of it. Mr. Baxter, sir, if we don't meet again in this world, I just want you to know it's been a honor just being here with you and your wonderful family for this brief spell. Sonny, you be a good little tyke and help me up with that pack. If I get keeled over too far, especially in winter, it's sometimes weeks before I can get upright again.
Dad!
John. All right. He can stay. But you're gonna work just like everyone else.
Mr. Baxter, sir, I'm no stranger to hard work. I'll be the best bartender you ever had.
Bellhop.
Should I put him in the corner room, Dad?
In the corner? Why not put him in the presidential suite?
Fine with me. Always did like that room.
Well, we got ourselves a bellhop, Chief.
Is that a little too much for you there, Sonny? Let me take the bedroll.
No, it's okay.
I'll tell you, I found if you put that a little higher up on your back, it's easier to manage.
Later, in the barn.
She was taking in $14,000 a month easy in them days. As soon as the mines played out, of course, the Grand Imperial started downhill. Yes, sir, Jake was just different from most folks, that's all. Like, he most always would have some kind of bird in here with a busted wing. Or he'd carry hay up to Deer Flats if the snow was too deep. Or took care of the engines when hard times hit them.
There are engines or Indians around here?
Used to be lots of them, but they've mostly died off now or moved away.
Johnny!
What's wrong?
I was drawing a pail of water to mop the kitchen floor, yeah? And look what came out of the faucet!
A fish?
A fish.
A guppy. They's always getting sucked out of the pond.
You mean we have fish in our water?
Can't harm you now, ma'am, but they're curious little fellers. That's why Jake put that strainer over the bathtub.
Now, don't worry about it, honey, because I'll get it fixed.
When? And with what?
Well, I'm gonna get a loan.
You caught me at a bad time.
I'm in a bank loan. A lot of things need fixing around here. There's a water heater in the kitchen, the carpeting upstairs, and then the... Is there a bank in town?
Bank of Silver Hill, owned by a man named Ridgway. Yeah.
Ridgway? Well, now, that's the man that's interested in buying this property.
How much do you intend to borrow?
I don't know. Enough to do it upright. We're going to run a hotel. Let's run a first-class hotel, right?
Right.
Right.
Wrong.
At the bank.
As a collateral risk, your hotel is all wrong. For my bank, at any rate.
Well, I do feel that the hotel has potential, and if I...
Mr. Baxter, have you ever managed a hotel?
No.
Run a restaurant? Stock the bar?
Actually, no, but... I shouldn't think it was too difficult. I mean, the beds are all there, and my wife, Sue, is a very good cook.
Well, now, Mr. Baxter, I would like to help you, but you see, as president of this bank, my first responsibility is to our depositors.
A secretary knits her brow.
Mr. Ridgway, you offered to buy the hotel. I have a letter here.
That offer still stands.
Well, then I don't understand. I mean, why is it good business for you and not for your bank?
Well, I've never told anybody this before, but I've had a dream for some time of making that old place into a memorial for Jake.
A memorial?
Yes. The Jacob Barnsworth Home for Boys. How does that sound to you?
Very nice.
Oh, fine. I'll be happy to take it off your hands.
Mr. Ridgway, I think I really should discuss this with my wife before I... Make any
Well, of course. It's just that I always feel if we can do something for our fellow man, we should do it while we can. But don't let me influence you. I mean, if you intend to go through with this, well, I'd be the last person to discourage you.
Johnny leaves the bank, and Ridgway watches him through the window. The secretary sternly eyes the mustached banker.
The Jacob Barnsworth Home for Boys.
You know, if that fool knew what he had there, he wouldn't be coming in here hat in hand.
In the snowy foothills of a jagged mountain range, Johnny walks arm in arm with Susie.
Well, maybe we'd just be throwing good money after bad.
Maybe. I think we could have made it work. Well, we'd never get rich, but it would have been a good life. Not only for the kids, but for us. I kind of like it here.
So do I. Raccoons and all.
They wrap their arms around each other and see a snowmobile approaching. The driver wears a letterman's jacket.
Hi! You taking a walk in the snow? Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Oh, I'm Molly Perkins. Remember? From the gas station?
Oh, yes. How are you?
Oh, okay. Oh, Gordon Bauer's pipes froze last night, and I was giving him a hand, but my blowtorch set his wall on fire. He sure gets mad easy.
Johnny crouches by the snowmobile and reads lettering on the hood.
Fine.
Standard Rules Plum Pharmacy?
Oh, that was Standard Plumbing and Spruill's Pharmacy. See, this used to be two snowmobiles. Well, three counting the motor. They got totaled in last year's cross country, and I collected the pieces.
What's a cross country?
Oh, well, the Silver Hill Annual Cross Country Snowmobile Race. Folks around here hold it every year. Martin Ridgway's won it 3 years in a row, you know. How's the family?
Oh, fine. Chris is in the kitchen. Why don't you go down and say hello?
Okay. I hope you don't mind me making tracks in your snow.
Help yourself.
As he pulls away, Johnny grabs him and slips.
What?
Is all this my snow?
I guess so, if you want it.
Johnny looks around at the mountains and rolling hills.
Well, didn't Jesse say that the property went back into those hills?
I didn't pay much attention.
Well, yeah, it goes back as far as you can see.
Well, we know this is ours.
He looks down at the hotel in a mountain-rimmed valley.
With all this precious, beautiful stuff.
He grabs handfuls of snow.
Can't get much for snow around here, you know.
Woo-hoo! Johnny, what's going on?
Susie, what's the most popular sport in the country right now?
Bowling.
No.
Baseball?
No.
Tennis.
Ping pong?
Honey, what do the Pfeiffers do every weekend and Roy and Barbara?
Go skiing.
That's right. And half the time they claim they can't get accommodations.
You mean turn the hotel into a ski lodge?
Yes. People will come from all over the country to ski a hill like that.
But Johnny, doesn't it cost a fortune to start something
like
that?
Don't worry. Ridgway will loan me money on this.
Don't bet on it.
Okay. I'll go to another bank. What about Crystal Highlands? They got banks over there, don't they?
Well, sure. I got a couple of good ones.
Well, there you are.
Later, Johnny uses the phone.
It can't help but be an instant success, Mr. Wainwright. I mean, we could come to your bank next year for more money to expand. Well, it's very accessible, sir. Yes, sir. Right outside Silver Hill. This afternoon. Yes, sir. Oh, well, of course, I love to ski, doesn't everybody? Nothing like it, sir. Yeah. Oh. That's fine, Mr. Wainwright. 1 o'clock. I'll be there. He loves the idea. Wants to meet this afternoon.
But Johnny...
Molly, do you have boots and skis and clothes and stuff I can borrow?
Sure.
Wait, Johnny, what's this all about? You love to ski.
Honey, a bank is not going to loan money for a ski lodge to a guy that doesn't know anything about skiing.
But...
Honey, I've got to make him think I know what I'm doing. I made that mistake with Ridgway. I told him I didn't know anything about running a hotel. I'm not going to make that same mistake twice.
At a ski resort, wearing a red sweater with a reindeer on it, Johnny carries skis and poles.
Can you tell me where the ski shop is?
A man points, putting his skis and poles on his shoulder. Johnny heads that way. He walks across a deck outside the lodge where skiers mingle. Wearing a hat with his goggles pushed above his forehead, Johnny sees a tall man and turns after him. As he swings his skis, he knocks another man's hat off.
Mr. Wainwright?
Hey! Watch it, Mac.
Oh!
As he stoops to help, he hits a woman with his skis.
Excuse me, miss. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to...
Johnny backs up, pinning a ruddy-faced man to the wall with the tips of his skis.
Mr. Wainwright?
Mr. Baxter.
Later, in line for the chairlift, they ski between ropes.
I really envy you, Baxter, in this new venture of yours.
You do?
Yes, I guess every skier dreams of owning his own slope. But I'd never have the courage to chuck everything and do it the way you are. Yes, sir, I envy you.
As they round a corner, Johnny slips down an incline as Wainwright skis ahead. Skiers in line wait as Johnny awkwardly skates and catches up to Wainwright, who adjusts his gear. Johnny mimics him.
Always like to check my bindings before I get on this chairlift, don't you?
Oh, always.
Johnny watches the way the older man holds his poles without using the straps and copies him as they move forward in line.
Did you figure on any ancillary activities at the lodge?
Yes, there's bound to be some of that. You know how skiers are.
The chairlift scoops them up.
Kind of caught you there, didn't it?
Yeah.
Johnny hangs on as the two-person chair swings. Looking back, he watches skiers carve turns on a slope. One of them falls and Johnny looks away. Wide-eyed, he stares up the hill.
Some of the skiers call this run Nightmare Alley. But I think you'll enjoy it.
Johnny nods. As he stares down at the ground, he lets go of the pole between them, then nervously grabs on again.
You plan on putting in a chairlift like this or starting with a rope toe?
I was thinking about a rope toe. Generally, because it's cheaper.
Good thinking. Then you can expand later.
Johnny looks down. A man careens downhill on his back. A ski pops off as he cartwheels.
What do you say they call this run?
Nightmare Alley.
Sounds like fun.
A sign on the lift terminal reads, "Ski tips up." Not looking, Johnny rams into the platform.
Stop the chair!
Wainwright waits at the bottom of the snowy ramp as Johnny climbs up the platform.
You all right, sir? Here.
No, I got it.
Let me give you a hand.
Two lift attendants help him up.
Okay. No. Crossed up there. Okay, now. Good.
Johnny waves to Wainwright as the attendants uncross his skis. Later, Johnny and Wainwright gently ski to a stop in front of a lodge.
There she is, Nightmare Alley.
Graceful skiers head down a steep trail.
How about a cup of coffee, huh?
Oh, we'll be at the bottom in 5 minutes. Then we can have lunch and discuss your project in depth.
Good.
Wainwright pulls his goggles over his eyes. Johnny does the same, then copies the older man as he loops his pole straps around his wrists.
Well, you ready?
Oh, I'm ready as I'll ever be.
Ow!
What's the matter?
Oh, it's nothing. Nothing's old football injury that sometimes kind of acts up when I get... Ooh, get my knee twisted.
Well, maybe we'd better wait a while before we make the run.
Oh, no. Now, don't be silly. I don't want to spoil your skiing. You go on to the bottom, I'll take it easy, and I'll meet you down there.
You're sure?
Oh, absolutely. Positive. I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, all right. I'll see you later, but you be careful.
I will.
Wainwright skis off, and Johnny releases a heavy exhale. Pushing off with his poles, Johnny skis toward a group, picking up speed as he passes by.
Excuse me, where do I catch the ski lift on the slope? Oh!
He slams into a ski rack, knocking it over and sending skis sliding downhill. People race after their skis.
Look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean
Will
to
you
do
get
that.
Out of here!
The angry man pushes Johnny, who slides downhill, backward. Johnny flails his arms as he makes a beeline down the slope, almost hitting Wainwright, who carves smooth turns.
Look out!
Faster! You ski
backwards. It takes a strain off the old knee. Look out!
Johnny careens backward into a fir tree that bends with his weight, then snaps upright, slinging him downhill, frontward.
See you later.
He wobbles as he picks up speed. Crouching, he tucks his poles between his legs and zooms in a straight line. His mouth hangs open as he sees a rise. Standing up, he waves his arms as he barrels toward a skier.
Look out!
Johnny crouches and skis between the man's legs. The man falls over and Johnny speeds downhill, out of control. He veers off the trail into the woods, ducking as he snakes between branches.
Oh, no.
He skis across a fallen tree onto the trail and grabs a woman from behind.
No!
Oh, ma'am, I'm
very sorry. I just couldn't help myself there.
Aren't you a tease? Why did you pick me with so many other pretty girls on the slope?
You're slipping.
He drops her and she slams into a snowdrift. Johnny skis over it and stops on the edge of a steep drop, swaying to keep his balance. He slides down the slope, pinwheeling his arms, then soars off a jump, clearing a skier fixing his skis. Johnny speeds toward a resting group of skiers. He zips by them, then launches off a jump and does a graceful flip. He lands, and the group applauds. Where two trails meet, Johnny faceplants into deep snow. An athletic man skis up to him.
You all right?
Huh?
You all right?
Oh, oh yeah. I'm alive.
Let me help you.
Okay.
Easy now.
Well, wait a minute.
Easy now.
Wait a minute. I can't get this.
Easy
right
now.
Oak. Thanks. Oh, thanks a lot. Oh, boy.
There. You're all right. Hey, that was quite a tumble you took there.
Yeah, but I didn't mind at all, I'll tell you.
Well, when you do take a spill like that, there's only one thing to do. Get right back up on these skis and try it again.
No.
Not too fast now, and don't forget your instructor.
Ho!
The man gives him a gentle push, and Johnny starts downhill again.
Ho! Look out!
He waves his arms and skis through a ski class.
Get on track when you want to pass! Track!
Johnny knocks two skiers down, then jumps and lands, straddling a tow rope that pulls people uphill. People let go of the rope as he skis toward them. Four skiers fall down, and more flee as he barrels down the rope. Johnny lifts a ski over a fallen man and veers back onto a trail. A woman in a horse-drawn sleigh stops, and Johnny sits on the back of his skis as he zooms under the horse. Cutting through the woods, he sails off another jump. Tracks lead to a rock where two skis stick out of the snow. Uphill, an evergreen falls over, revealing Johnny gaping with his goggles askew on his stunned face.
Yeah.
He falls back. At home, Richard reads a newspaper.
Leaving a wake of destruction from Farewell Gap to Aspen Flats, where's wild run was finally halted by a tree. The ski patrol had to recruit volunteers to remove John Baxter's victims from the slopes, and the emergency hospital reported that not since the avalanche of 1946 had more accident cases been treated there in one day. Doctors there could not explain how Baxter survived the blow, which felled a tree, and in...
The dog looks over.
Anthropologist? Yeah. An anthropologist from Harvard wants to measure the thickness of Baxter's skull.
Very funny.
We've heard enough of that. It's good publicity anyway.
It's bad for loans.
Richard hurries to the front door and opens it to Ridgway.
Is Mr. Baxter in?
Are you from Harvard?
Harvard?
Mr. Ridgway.
Oh, there you are, Baxter. Yeah.
Well, it's nice of you to drop by, Mr. Ridgway.
Well, I see you made quite a hit at Crystal Highlands. Oh, and this must be Mrs. Baxter.
Oh, yes, and this is my son, Richard.
Well, how do you do? And tell me, what's his name?
Oh, this is Stoutheart.
Well, how are you, big fella?
Stoutheart!
Richard, I think you better take him to the kitchen.
Come on, boy.
Richard walks off with the dog.
Dogs are a good judge of character, you know.
Hey, tell me, Baxter, in light of your experience, would you care to reconsider my offer to buy this old place?
Mr. Ridgway, I think I'll stay with my plans for a ski lodge.
Well, I tell you, if you're determined to follow your dream, I'd like to help make it come true.
You would?
Sure. How much do you need to open these doors here?
$25,000.
I'll loan you three.
Well, that would open one door part way.
I'll take it.
That's my trouble. I always let my heart rule my head.
Johnny, may I speak to you for a minute?
Now, I took the liberty of bringing this form along just in case. Now, if you'll just sign all those X's, it'll save you a trip to town.
As Johnny signs, Wally enters with tools.
Mr. Baxter, I think these ought to do it.
Oh, fine, Wally. Go to work.
Oh, hi, Mr. Ridgway.
What are you doing here?
I'm fixing their water heater.
I thought you were working for Double L.
Oh, it's my day off.
Susie eyes the banker.
There you are.
And there you are, a check for $3,000. It's a pleasure doing business with you, Mr. Baxter. And I know you're going to make this place into something real special. It's been a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Baxter, and my very best to your son.
Ridgway leaves.
Honey, I think we're in business. I tell you what let's do. Let's make a list of everything we're going to need, okay? Let's start with $500 for the bar, right? I mean, I'd like to have plenty of everything just in case some weekend we're really jammed up.
Jammed up?
In the kitchen. What do we need in the kitchen?
Wally and Jesse work on a water heater.
I don't trust that Ridgway. He wants this place for something, and it's not a home for wayward boys.
Now, honey, can't you believe that a successful man like Ridgway just might want to give somebody a helping hand?
Not unless he made a buck he wouldn't.
Well, here's the proof. Here's a check for $3,000. Now, where were we? You taking notes? $500 for the bar. Now, we only want to serve the finest food, so let's figure, $500 to start for groceries.
I don't recollect it taking on like that before.
The water heater steams.
Things like that, let's figure $300 at the outside.
Well, we need now try it.
The Baxter's daughter, Chris, turns a faucet handle.
Now there's no water at all.
I wonder if I've got the inflow where the safety valve's supposed to go.
What should we put down for a ski instructor?
Oh, they don't come cheap.
Well, I do.
Have you ever been a ski instructor?
No, but if I sew a band on my sleeve, who'll know the difference?
$100 a month in room and board.
It's a deal.
You mean he's gonna live here?
I don't think it's your inflow or your outflow either.
Spewing steam envelops the water heater.
Now, what do you figure we need for the dining room? Glasses, dishes, stuff like that. $200?
Wally and Jesse crank valves on the shuttering water heater.
What does that come to?
$2,800.
$2,800, that's perfect. Still leaves us $200 for a rope tow engine.
What's a rope tow engine?
Rope tow engine is an engine around the rope tow.
Jesse runs out of the kitchen with Wally, Richard, Chris, and Stouthart.
Got a tow.
It's got a blow!
Everyone takes cover. Steam blows the doors open as pots and pans tumble across the room. As the steam dissipates, Jesse throws down a metal bowl. Johnny's mouth hangs open as he heads for the kitchen, a worried look on his face. He slowly opens the door and steps into the steamy kitchen with the others. Twisted metal hangs off the water heater, and steam spews from the machine. A mangled pot rack rests on an overturned table. Jesse hangs his head between Johnny and Susie, who survey the damage.
Well, it ain't too bad. Figure $20 for the windows, $175 for a new water heater.
Which leaves nothing for a rope tow engine.
Outside, Jesse shows them a sawmill engine.
Call them donkey engines. They could worry a 6-ton log out of the woods, so it shouldn't even breathe heavy, pulling a few skiers on a rope.
Well, you think it'll still run?
Build your head and find out. Nothing fancy about a steam engine.
Yeah, but how are you going to move it to the hotel?
Oh, we can drag it out of here easy enough.
Good, good.
Getting it up the hill, though. Now, that might be something else.
At the gas station, they hover around Double L as he works on a truck engine.
My snowcat's broke.
It was working 2 days ago.
Well, it's broke now.
You afraid Ridgway wouldn't like it?
You know, Mr. Ridgway loaned me the money to get started.
Well, I don't mean diddly squat. Loaned me money on my house 3 years ago, then laid me off here. Now I'm renting from him. Sorry, gents, the snowcat is broke.
He goes back to work on the engine, frowning. Wally walks away, and the others follow. Double L stares after them and sighs. In the station wagon, Richard and Jesse ride in the back, while Johnny drives and Wally rides next to him.
Pete Bowles has a D4 that'd pull it up the hill.
Dad?
Wait a minute, son. What's a D4?
A man plows snow with a bulldozer.
How about it, Mr. Bowles?
The driver idles his machine.
I'd really like to help you fellas out, but if I was ever to lose this rig on that hill, I'd be out of business for over a month. You understand how it is, don't you?
I'm beginning to.
Johnny and the others dejectedly hang their heads as they walk back to the station wagon. Jesse kicks snow.
I know what the problem is. Ridgway owns the pink on it, and Pete's behind in his payments.
Dad!
Not now, Richard. Can't you see I got something on my mind?
Richard frowns as his dad gets behind the wheel. At night, Johnny sits in front of the fireplace with Susie, who sews.
If you want to sing a few choruses of I Told You So, feel free. I stepped right into Ridgway's parlor.
Susie puts down her sewing and sits on the arm of Johnny's chair. Wearing a kind expression, she caresses his arm.
Whole thing's going down the drain.
She lays her cheek against his head.
So let it go. It's not the end of the world.
I've never wanted anything so much in my life.
Oh, I forgot.
She hands him a note.
From Richard, whose lower lip is out of foot.
I was a little hard on him today. He kept interrupting and I was busy. Dear Dad, if a donkey engine can pull a 6-ton log out of the woods, why can't it pull itself up a hill? Respectfully, your son, Richard.
On a bright day, the donkey engine smokes as it moves uphill on a sled. Connected to ropes, Johnny rides with Susie, Richard, and Jesse.
It works beautifully, doesn't it?
The engine chugs uphill toward Chris and Wally, who fidget excitedly. Johnny handles the rope wrapped around a winch.
Toot the whistle again, Richard.
You be careful too, Richard.
Hold the whistle, son.
Not too fast.
Here we come, Chrissy.
All the way. Richard, just hear this out.
Well, we started out the rope.
You're going to make it.
Richard jumps up and down excitedly. Susie waves to her beaming daughter, who takes off downhill with Wally.
Be careful.
The sled stops at an anchor point on the hill, and Chris hugs her dad.
Yeah! We made it, Chris.
Of course we made it.
Yes,
we did. Dad, we're going ahead of this?
Of course we are. We're going clear to the top.
All right.
The tow rope's going clear to the top anyway, but the donkey engine stays right here. This is the midway point, you see. The beginning skiers will ski down from here. The advance will come all the way from the top. And right over there, there's a place for a donkey, for a bunny slope.
Susie smiles at him.
Anyway, it looks like we're in business.
Johnny embraces his wife, and Wally wraps an arm around Chris. She looks at his hand on his shoulder, then studies his grinning face. Meeting her stern gaze, he shrugs. Later, a banner hangs above the front door. Welcome, Grand Imperial Hotel reopening. A shoveled path leads to the entrance. Inside, wearing a suit and tie, Johnny finds his family in the dining room, where the tables are set with blue and white checkered cloths. Susie eyes Johnny, her lips pressed in a line, and he grins. Wearing an apron, Chris frowns at her father, who winks at her. Jesse sports a red bellhop's jacket and glances at Johnny, who shifts his eyes as he turns away.
Richard, stop eating the crackers.
Nobody else is here to eat them.
Well, now there'll be plenty of skiers around just as soon as they discover us.
There's the 250 loaded with big tippin' skiers, all headed for Crystal Highlands.
Can I go out and help Wally?
No. I don't want you near those explosives.
Wally knows all about blasting.
He knew all about water heaters, too.
Shouldn't he have that stump out by now?
You'll know when she's out.
On a snowy hillside, Wally presses a detonator. The hotel shakes.
Out.
Jesse and the others go to a window and look skyward. Richard knits his brow.
Is that the stump?
If it ain't, you better start looking for a new ski instructor.
Wally watches the airborne stump land in the blast hole.
Oh, darn.
Wearing a helmet, he grabs a shovel and trudges toward the stump. Pausing, he narrows his eyes and looks around. He hops on his snowmobile. Wally motors across a hillside, then stops his snowmobile and gets off. Pushing up his goggles, he stares down into a valley, where a snowslide engulfs a train and blocks the tracks.
Oh, boy!
Wally runs back to his snowmobile. He turns uphill, then races across a slope and drives toward the hotel. Johnny comes outside, putting on his coat. On his heels, Richard and Jesse hurry after him as Wally pulls up.
The train's stuck. There's been an avalanche.
What?
The train's stuck. There's been an avalanche.
An avalanche?
Yeah, it blocked the Crystal Highlands Road. It's going to take them some time to dig it out.
I better call Crystal Highlands.
Yeah.
First thing to do is to get them skiers in where it's warm.
Johnny comes back outside, his keen eyes trained on Jesse.
Well, you old claim jumper.
Jesse clenches his lips.
I like the way you think. Break out the steak, Susie, and whip up the cheese fondue. We're about to be busting at the seams with skiers.
On a snowy road, two horse-drawn sleighs carry passengers. Next to a stylish woman on the driver's seat, Johnny holds the reins.
Get up there, boy.
This is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me.
I still don't know what could have caused an avalanche.
Probably just a freak of nature.
Yeah, you can say that again, Miss Boyd.
You know, you're a real hero, Johnny. Well, you rescued us and everything. Is it okay if I call you Johnny?
Oh, sure. We're very informal at the Grand Imperial.
Good. And you can call me Naomi.
Get up there, boy.
Two horses break into a trot, pulling the sleigh uphill. At the hotel's front desk, Susie faces a crush of guests. Johnny leads Naomi and more skiers into the hotel.
Put your bags down here and then register at the bar, please.
Chris runs up to Johnny.
Rum.
What?
It's not in the bartender's manual, and I've got to know if he's
honey,
the
butter
look,
or the rum. Honey, look,
just
a minute, Chris. You serve, and I'll take over the bar,
oh,
okay?
Oh, thank you.
Wally, look, get the sleigh, go back and get another load of customers, and hurry up, because they're going to have that train out pretty soon. Who had the hot buttered rum?
A couple glares at Susie.
Aren't there any sweets in this hotel?
I'm sorry, Mr. Manescu, but it's the best we have. In fact, it's about all we have. We're almost filled up.
I'm sorry, my dear. The match luggage
isn't waiting.
Hey! What about these?
Can't leave them in the lobby, mister. Better bring them with you.
Mr. Manescu frowns, and Susie checks in more guests.
Miss Naomi Voigt. Are you related to that nice, cute Johnny? His older sister or something?
Or something.
Would you like a single? Naturally.
Naomi signs the guest book and returns Susie's pen.
Thank you.
Next.
Please.
I'm single. I'm not married.
Johnny bartends.
Daddy, somebody in there just ordered Harvey Wallbanger. Is that really a drink or was he just putting me on?
Wallbanger?
With a slice of cucumber.
I'm pooped. Is that all of them?
Until the next load. Jesse, take over the desk while I start dinner.
A man unsteady on his feet shows Jesse his beverage.
There's a fish in my drink. Not so loud. Everybody will want one.
Grinning, the man holds a finger to his lips. In the lounge, a stocky kid sporting a ski sweater eyes Richard, who wears an apron.
What a darling apron.
Richard stares him down.
How'd you like a fat lip?
Oh, yeah?
Why don't you try?
Richard, can I just...
Richard slugs his dad in the gut, and Johnny pulls him aside.
Well, he started it. I don't care if my business get dirty. I'm not going to wear any apron.
We'll talk about it later.
Richard takes off his apron and marches away. At night, Johnny stands on the front porch and folds his arms against the cold. Susie joins him.
Everybody in bed?
Finally.
What do you think about a couple of tennis courts right over there? I mean, come spring, of course.
Perfect.
She holds her shearling coat closed, and he wraps an arm around her.
You tired?
Oh, I'm exhausted.
He holds her close.
How about you?
Happy, exhausted. People seem to like the place, don't they?
She nods.
All except the Manescus, and they'd find something wrong with the Taj Mahal. We can keep them happy for 2 weeks. We'll be out of the woods.
You get much nicer to Naomi tight pants.
She might stay through the spring.
Just trying to be a good host, ma'am.
Well, room service is closed for the night.
You nut.
They share a sweet kiss.
Who's that?
Well, it's our room. It's Miss Ogle.
They rush inside and head upstairs, where guests gather in the hall.
Miss Ogilvy, what happened?
I just turned out the lights and got into bed, and he...
No, I'll handle this, Miss Ogilvy.
Johnny strides into her room.
What are you doing in this lady's room? You have no business coming in here uninvited. Now you get out of here this minute.
I'm sorry, Miss Ogilvy. This will never happen again.
Holding Stoutheart by the collar, Johnny walks off with the big dog, and Mrs. Ogilvy returns to her room. On a bright day, skiers make smooth turns on a broad trail. At the bottom, a rope tow pulls people uphill to the midpoint. As Jesse mans the donkey engine, chugging away at the midpoint, Richard comes over.
How's the steam, Jesse?
Fire's down a little. We might could use a couple more chunks.
In the hotel, Johnny carries logs to a firewood bin, while Susie clears glasses in the lounge.
Hi.
Hi.
How's the steam engine working?
Perfect. That thing could pull the whole town up the hill. Need some help with that?
No.
Hey, where's Chris?
I let her go skiing. She's coming back to help me set up for lunch.
Oh.
At the front desk, Johnny takes off his jacket and checks the guest book. Naomi sits on the stairs behind him. She flicks his hair.
Hi, Johnny.
Oh, well, hi, Naomi.
Ooh, so cuddly and snuggly in that feather bed. I just didn't want to get up.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The ski instructor's starting his beginner's class. If you'd like to get right out there, you'll probably get some skiing in.
I was hoping you'd give me private lessons, Johnny. You do ski, don't you?
Yeah, of course I ski. But I have to relieve Jesse on the tow engine for lunch.
Oh.
On the slopes, Wally reads a booklet, How to Ski, 1970 edition. Wearing an orange parka and a striped knit cap with his goggles around his forehead, he tucks the booklet in his pocket and faces a ski class.
Okay, class, can I have your attention, please?
A woman falls over.
Help her up. It's going to have to be a lot on the slopes.
He faces a line of skiers. Okay.
Now, the lesson today will be straight running, or shussing, as it's called. Well, I guess the best way to get the hang of it is just to try it. Who wants to go first? Oh, come on. Come on, Miss Grable. You go first.
But really, perhaps one of the others might...
There's nothing to be scared of, Miss Grable. I'll go down with you. Now, remember, just relax and flex the knees. Good.
He holds her arm, and they ski downhill side by side.
Very good. Very good, Miss Grable. Not so fast. A snowplow.
She grabs a tree, and Wally slides away. He crashes into a fir tree that bends over a cliff.
Man overboard!
Wally looks at the ground far below.
Help! Help! We need help! The instructor's gone over the side!
What did he say?
I think he said somebody went over the side.
Wally hangs from the tree.
Help!
Chris joins a group of skiers watching Wally dangle.
Somebody help!
It's Wally! Wally!
Jesse tugs the whistle string.
Man over the side!
The tow rope pulls Johnny uphill. Wally clings to the tree as it bends further over the cliff.
No!
Chris watches his ski fall off.
Hang on, Wally!
I'm trying!
Johnny skis toward people gathered at the cliff's edge.
Oh! Hey! Track! No, don't track!
Chris and two guys grab hold of Johnny. Wally adjusts his grip.
Oh, no.
Jesse hands Richard a length of rope.
Run this around that tree over there and bring it to your paw. Tell him how to lower him down with the donkey engine.
Stay calm!
Oh, you've got to do something, please!
We will, honey, we will. How about a helicopter?
Richard ties the rope around Johnny.
Dad, Jesse says he can let you down on the tow rope.
Good. What?
Hold on, Wally. Daddy's coming to get you.
Wally grins with exertion.
Hold on.
Johnny slips and slides in place, then finds his balance. The group around him grabs the rope.
Let some rope out.
Let out more rope!
Right.
At the engine, Jesse pulls a lever.
Hang on, Wally. More rope!
More rope!
Johnny sidesteps downhill on his skis.
You better hurry! Let it out!
At the engine, Jesse adds wood to the fire, and the lever moves on its own. The tow rope goes slack, and Johnny falls.
Jesse!
As Johnny slides on his belly, Jesse knocks a burning log onto an anchor rope, holding the sled in place. Johnny coasts onto the tree bent over the cliff. He shimmies closer to Wally, who hangs by his hands, one ski caught on the trunk. Johnny frees Wally's leg, and the young man dangles.
I'll cut you now, Wally. Get your leg up.
Wally swings a leg over the trunk and straddles the tree. At the engine, the flaming piece of wood burns the anchor rope. Straddling the tree, Wally faces Johnny, who balances on the trunk with the tow rope tied around his waist.
I sure hate to put you in all this trouble, Mr. Baxter. See, I was giving a lesson.
Just shut up.
The tree arcs over the rocky cliff.
Now look, you hang on, and I'm going to try and turn myself around.
You all right, Dad?
Perfect!
Johnny's chest heaves as he catches his breath, then moves carefully while he grabs a hold of his arm. At the engine, a flame flickers on the blackened anchor rope. Meanwhile, Johnny straddles the tree ahead of Wally. Facing the cliff, Johnny adjusts the tow rope looped around his waist. As Wally scoots closer to Johnny and wraps his arms around him, the tree bends more. Johnny grips the rope, and Wally grabs him around the chest and neck, choking him. The engine steams and winches turn, cranking the rope.
Easy! Easy!
Wally rides piggyback as the rope tows Johnny on his skis.
He's got him! He's got him!
Hunched over, Johnny balances Wally on his back as they're towed uphill. The rope anchoring the engine to the hillside burns.
Come on, Dad, can I get you? Come on!
Johnny and Wally reach the group, and the tow rope stops. Jesse pumps the whistle string.
Oh, Wally, your arm! You're broken!
No, I'm okay.
We better get you to a doctor.
No.
Daddy!
Oh, you were great, Mr. Baxter.
Daddy, we better get Wally to a doctor.
The burning anchor rope splits, and the engine starts to slip downhill on its sled. Jesse grabs the broken rope and tries to hold the heavy sled.
Whoa, God damn you!
The engine tears an anchor post out of the snow as it glides downhill. The tow rope tightens and yanks Johnny away. Jesse hops on the sled.
Jesse! Jesse!
Johnny skis behind the sled as the tow rope whips him around. Skiers get out of the way. Johnny skis alongside the engine on the sled.
Jesse, stop that thing! You tell me how!
Johnny waves off skiers.
Out of the way!
The rope trips up skiers, who fall as Johnny races by.
Get out of there!
The rope clotheslines a group.
See? I told you.
The sled barrels downhill.
Jesse, stop it! The hotel!
Jesse gapes as the sled speeds toward the hotel. Inside, Susie uses the phone.
I don't know what's wrong, but it's something. The steam whistle's been blowing like crazy.
The sled nears the barn. Susie grips the phone.
I don't know if we need an ambulance, but send one anyway. Goodbye.
The sled plows through the dining room. Susie flees as it heads for the kitchen.
Jesse, where's Johnny?
Coming!
The sled crashes through a window, and Susie gapes as Johnny skis past her.
Susie!
Johnny! What happened?
You wouldn't believe it if I...
He gets yanked outside. Susie runs to the opening in the wall and sees Johnny headfirst in the snow next to the wrecked engine. Jesse and Johnny sit up in the snow. Wearing a black turtleneck sweater, Susie folds her arms against the cold as she turns away from the giant opening and surveys the hotel. Chandeliers sway and her mouth hangs open. Clenching her lips, she looks at Johnny, who waves. Later, at the bank, he paces in front of Ridgeway.
Then it went through one side of the hotel and came out the other. Made a disaster area out of the dining room. I patched up what I could, but it still gets a little breezy in there at times.
And you guess, how are they enjoying half a hotel? They aren't, are they? As a matter of fact, they've all left, haven't they?
Yes, but they all did say they had fun while it lasted.
What you're trying to say, in essence, is that you will be unable to meet your obligation to the bank this month.
Not and do the necessary repairs to the hotel. Now, I wanted to talk to you about an extension, Mr. Ridgeway. You see?
Baxter, I like you.
Thank you, Mr. Ridgeway. I like you, too.
And because I like you, I'm going to do you a little favor. Rather than let you throw more good money down that rat hole and force me to all the trouble and unpleasantness of getting a foreclosure, I'm going to take that white elephant off your hands and I'm going to give you, out of my own pocket, not the bank's, I'm going to give you $200. Now, that should see you and that sweet little family of yours safe back to New York where you belong. What do you say?
The secretary clenches her lips in a disgusted frown.
It's very kind of you, Mr. Ridgeway. But I do have until the 15th.
Yeah, but that's 5 days from now. How are you going to get the money by then?
I don't know. But I'll get it.
As Johnny walks away, the secretary nudges him with her elbow and pumps her fist in solidarity. On his way out, Johnny sees a poster. Silver Hill Winter National, annual snowmobile race. First prize, $2,500. Second prize, $1,500. Third prize, $1,000. Johnny thoughtfully shifts his gaze. He strides out of the bank, passing a group of kids chatting on the sidewalk.
Richard?
Oh, yeah.
Where's Wally?
I guess he's at the doctor's. What did Mr. Ridgeway say?
No.
Well, what are we going to do?
We're going to win the Silver Hill snowmobile race. That's what we're going to do.
We are?
Yep. Wally's going to drive, and I'm...
Johnny stops short as he sees Wally leaning against the station wagon with his arm in a sling. Later, Susie marches out of the hotel, holding Richard's hand. A light snow falls as they pick up their pace and jog toward the barn. Inside with Johnny, Wally leans against the snowmobile. Susie and Richard enter as Johnny works on the engine with Jesse. The men look up.
Do I understand, Richard, correctly? That you're driving that thing in a race?
Susie, we can't have outside drivers.
Well, that's the rules.
It's a rule.
Until we arrived here, you'd never seen a snowmobile before. And now you're going to race one at 80 miles an hour?
Oh, no, 40 tops. Okay, now look, I don't have to come in first. See, there are three prizes. Now, any one of those prizes would see us through till next fall.
Johnny, you've become so obsessed to hanging on to this place that you're not using good sense.
Now, Susie, look.
Look, I know what it means to you. And you've done everything you can to make a go of it. We all have. I put up with fish in the water.
I know you have.
And exploding heaters. And steam engines breaking through the house. But I'm not going to stand here and watch you get yourself killed.
Well, I'm giving him a crash program.
Jesse drops a wrench, getting Wally's attention.
Now listen to me, Johnny. You go through with this crazy idea of yours, and I'm leaving.
Johnny gapes.
I can't take any more.
She walks out and slams the door. Johnny stares after her, his brow furrowed with concern. Wally clenches his lips and nods.
Man does what he's got to do, Mr. Baxter.
Just shut up, Wally.
Later, at the race.
Himmler's department store has asked me to announce that the annual award for most original paint design and uniform coordination has been increased to $175.
Exhaust wafts over the crowd as racers prep their snowmobiles. A man in coveralls stands by a snowmobile on its side and examines the spinning track. Wearing a bib with double zeros on it, Johnny sits on Wally's snowmobile in front of Jesse, while Wally works on the engine.
Down Main Street,
It'll hold this time.
And it's going to smell roses any minute now.
Jesse, if you don't want to do this, just say so.
I don't want to do this.
Jesse.
All I'm saying is God never intended man to travel 80 miles an hour over snow. And if he did, it wasn't a no contraption put together with spit and baling wire. That's all I'm saying.
Have you seen Sue and the kids?
They're in Denver by now, where I'd be if I had any good sense.
Wearing a red snowsuit and a black helmet, Ridgway grips the handlebars of his snowmobile.
And Jack Hull.
That's it.
And right here.
Wally, you wired me to the carburetor.
I'm sorry.
At the starting line, snowmobiles idle in neat rows.
The Tate brothers.
Johnny climbs on the snowmobile, and Wally joins the secretary in the crowd.
Running good.
And driving the Red Devil for Silver Hill Bank.
Get on.
The winner of the grand prize for the past 2 years, Martin Ridgway and Double L Digma.
The secretary frowns.
And in the second row, a late entry, not in your program, driving the Mighty Mongrel.
Mighty Mongrel?
Yeah, the Mighty Mongrel.
Representing the Grand Imperial Hotel, John Baxter and Jesse McCord. Gentlemen,
are you ready for the start?
Wearing his fur coat, Jesse sits behind Johnny, gripping the back of the snowmobile. The announcer nods to a marshal who waves a green flag. The racers pull away from Johnny and Jesse, who stay put with their snowmobile jacked up on its kickstand.
This ain't as bad as I thought, Johnny.
The kickstand!
The kickstand!
Oh.
Push it off!
Jesse gets off, pushes the snowmobile, and falls face down in the street. Snow spews in his face as Johnny rides off. As people help Jesse to his feet, Johnny stops and runs over.
You all right?
For a 75-year-old papoose that just got dumped on his head, I'm fine.
Johnny holds Jesse up as they run to the snowmobile and climb on. Johnny settles in front, and they speed off. Johnny makes a left down a plowed street, and Jesse clings to the back. They round a bend, the only racers on the road.
We'll never catch up!
On the back of Ridgway's snowmobile, Double L glances over his shoulder. Double L leans left. They lead the pack through the countryside. Ridgway turns down a packed trail, while other racers swing wide into fresh powder. Double L checks behind him as Ridgway holds the lead on a downhill section. Racers riding side by side tail them. On a straightaway, Johnny edges onto a snowbank, then makes a sharp right turn. They bounce over bumps into powdery snow and follow a trail.
In the tires, lean the way I lead!
I'm having enough trouble just hanging on!
They pass through two flags, trail markers standing tall in the snow. In the lead, Ridgway and Double L cut across a valley. Behind them, a snowmobile careens off course into a hay bale. Two more riders swerve up a snowdrift, jumping clear as their snowmobile rolls over. Another snowmobile launches off a jump and blazes a trail through scrubby brush. Ridgway glances over his shoulder.
Right!
Double L leans with him. They lead the racers down a snaking switchback course. Johnny speeds down a bumpy trail.
Look out!
They catch air on a jump, landing on rugged terrain. Johnny steers into a bush, uprooting it.
Watch where you're going!
I can't see where we're going!
Bush lodges on the hood, blocking their view. Johnny pushes branches aside, revealing oncoming snowmobiles. Racers veer around them. Johnny passes the bush to Jesse, who falls off with it. He tumbles downhill like a snowball.
No.
Johnny steers toward a pair of flags. Rolling downhill, tangled up in the bush, Jesse barrels toward the course as racers speed by. He rolls across the trail, just missing a snowmobile, and lands in powdery snow. Jesse sits up, covered in snow, and claps powder off his mittens.
That does it.
On the race course, Johnny speeds around a curve.
We're traveling now, Jess!
Johnny zooms around another bend, leaning into it. On a flat stretch, he passes Jesse walking the other way and stops. Johnny looks quizzically behind him. Turning the snowmobile around, Johnny rides up next to Jesse, who swings his arms as he plods in the packed snow along the edge of the course.
How'd you get ahead of me?
Never mind. Tell me later. Get on.
Johnny, I wouldn't get on a three-week toot with you if you paid for it and threw it in the Dolly Sisters.
Now listen, Jesse. We can't win unless we finish with two riders. Get on this thing.
Not in your life. You let me off this thing.
Jesse kicks his legs as they speed away. Riding back to back, they zip around a corner.
We're catching up!
Johnny flies over a bump, and Jesse flips over him. He lands facing Johnny, who grips the handlebars. Jesse holds on to him.
You get up here!
I flew up here. How do you think I did?
I can't see! Get back to where you belong!
Fine with me. How do I do that?
They veer off course.
Jesse, hang on. No, not to the steering! Get back and sit down!
Jesse covers Johnny's eyes as he moves to the back of the snowmobile. They cut through the woods, blazing a trail through fluffy snow. The rest of the racers ride in a loose pack behind Ridgway and Double L. Double L checks over his shoulder, then taps Ridgway on the shoulder and grins. On a narrow trail in the woods, Johnny ricochets off a snowbank, then careens into the other side of the trail and bounces back on course. At the tail end of the pack, one snowmobile tips over, causing a second one to crash.
Look out, Johnny!
Johnny veers into the woods to avoid the crash. They blaze a fresh trail through the forest.
If we come out of this alive and I don't figure to, will you do me a favor?
What?
Fire me! Slow her down, Johnny!
I can't! The throttle's stuck!
They zoom out of the woods back onto the track, cutting off a snowmobile as they join the pack and start passing. In the lead, Ridgway and Double L lean right as they cruise around one flag, then lean left as they curve around another, making fresh tracks in the snow. Behind them, the pack follows their snaking trail. Johnny and Jesse follow two snowmobiles, bouncing over the bumpy trail. Snow sprays the windshield and Johnny's goggles. He steers around a flag, following the path in the snow. The pack spreads out on a broad hill, and Johnny starts to pass. On a bumpy stretch, he races ahead of the pack, gaining on Ridgway and Double L in the lead. Double L looks back and sees Johnny and Jesse getting closer. He taps Ridgway on the shoulder.
And damn, they're gaining on us! Give it the gas, come on! They're coming!
Why, shut up!
Jesse eyes Johnny.
We're coming in to sprint, we're on pass!
Johnny nods. Ridgway swerves in front of them, keeping the lead as they curve downhill. On a straightaway, Johnny pulls up alongside Ridgway. Side by side, they pass through a pair of flags, then cut across a mountain slope. As they race toward another set of flags, the snowmobiles gently bump against each other.
Ridgway, you horse's caboose! Bring out Johnny!
Get it over!
Ridgway kicks their snowmobile, shoving it off the course. Johnny and Jesse careen down a steep hill. At the bottom, they drive through a wall of snow. Darkness engulfs them.
Johnny?
I'm here. But I'm not sure where here is.
We dead?
I didn't want to be the first to mention it.
Johnny, I hate to add to your troubles, but it's getting hotter. Must be that go-round I had with the Widow Corzine. Heck, that was 20 years ago, and she started it.
I think we're moving. Where's that light switch?
The headlight shines on a tunnel wall.
We're on a mine cart.
Must be the old hard luck mine. They dug clean through the mountain. Never did find the vein.
They move deeper into the tunnel.
You mean this tunnel goes clear through the mountain?
Yep, and all they got was calluses.
We'll save miles.
The tunnel opens onto a ridge.
Jump on everybody.
You can say that again!
They sail off a platform and land on a mountainside. They plow through powdery snow, then zoom down the race course.
We're gonna bust it ski!
They bounce along on one ski.
We'll never make her, Johnny! That's the good ski that's busted, and the steering's got the wobblies.
It's just 2 miles, Jesse.
They pass through a pair of flags, and Ridgway crests a hill behind them.
Look! How'd they get up there?
I don't know how they got there.
There's the town.
They follow a trail toward town, where Wally waits with the secretary.
Well, when they come like that.
A race marshal whispers something to the announcer.
Folks, we just had a report from the Perkins farm. The leader just passed. He'll be turning in at the head of the street any second now. So we're going to have to clear the straightaway, folks. Clear the straightaway. Here he comes. It's the mighty Mongrel.
Johnny rams a snowbank, ricochets across the street, then bounces off another snowbank.
Steering's gone.
Pedestrians scatter as they careen down a side street. They sail over a plow ridge, then turn down a snowy street. As they make a left into an intersection, they slide, pinwheeling into a snowbank and falling off the snowmobile.
Folks, we just had another report from the Perkins farm. Martin Ridgway has just passed, and he's headed this way full bore.
Ridgway's just coming into town.
A mighty mongrel has suffered a second broken ski. It looks like 3 in a row for Martin Ridgway.
Oh, yeah? Come on, let's turn this thing around.
What?
We've gone this far on one ski, we can go the rest of the way on no skis.
Okay, all right, let's point it towards the line.
Here he comes! It's Martin Ridgway!
Ridgway crashes as Johnny and Jesse drag their snowmobile.
Come on, Ridgway's in a snowbank!
Of all the stupid things I've ever seen!
I tried to move
left! Lean left, would you?
I'm not going with you anymore.
Sit to the rear, Jesse. Lean back and keep the nose up.
Jesse leans back and Johnny drives on. Ridgway and Double L get back on course. At the finish, Johnny and Jesse ride parallel to the finish line just inches away. They lean toward it.
Lean, Jesse!
Here comes Ridgway. Give her the gun!
Ridgway crosses the finish.
We haven't crossed the finish line.
I know it!
And the winner is Martin Ridgway!
Stop this thing. It's all over.
At night, a breeze ruffles the banner hanging above the finish line. On a dimly lit street, a horse pulls the ski-less snowmobile on a sled. Straddling the seat, Johnny holds the reins. The horse stops under the banner, and Johnny gazes up at it, shivering. His breath mists into the cold air. Bowing his head, he flaps the reins. As the horse pulls the snowmobile down a deserted street, Johnny tugs on the reins, stopping it. Susie stands in the street, wearing a red hat and scarf, holding out her gloved thumb like a hitchhiker. Johnny stares at her, dumbstruck. Susie returns a soft smile.
Come on.
She strides over to him. She climbs on the back of the snowmobile, and they exchange a loving gaze.
I'm glad I married you.
Get up!
She wraps her arms around him. Later, they meet with Ridgway and his secretary.
And this is the quitclaim deed. And if you'll just sign all 4 copies.
Johnny hesitates.
Oh, now, Baxter, don't take it so hard. I'm sure there are many businesses you could do quite well in. Have you thought of insurance?
A lot.
Chris glances at Wally.
Mr. Ridgway, isn't there some way I could get an extension on?
I feel as bad about this as you, Baxter. But look at it this way. You're not losing a lodge. You're providing a home for wayward boys.
Boys home my foot.
Miss Wigginton.
I don't care if you do fire me. I can get $1 an hour in Denver. That's twice what you pay me. He wants this place because there are 3,000 acres of Douglas fir that goes with it.
There is.
You're darn right. Jacob Farnsworth deeded it to the Ute Indians up in these hills. It was to be theirs as long as they occupied it.
She's telling it right. They didn't have to prove up or nothing. Wasn't like when he gave the 200 acres for the town of Silver Hill. That was on condition the town fathers kicked in with a library, a church, and 2 hospitals. One for folks and one for dumb animals.
Anyway, the Utes have all left or died off. So, the timberland automatically reverts to the Jacob Farnsworth estate. And that's you, Mr. Baxter.
So that's why you wanted this place.
You're gonna cut down those woods back at town?
Now, let's stick to facts. You cannot meet the payment, and it's due today.
Dad?
Yeah, not now, Richard. I know it's due today, but if I could just have a...
There are no buts about it. If you refuse to sign the quit claim, you force me to start foreclosure proceedings tomorrow morning.
But, Dad...
I told you once, Richard.
Softening, Johnny looks at his son.
Did you want to say something, young man?
Well, I didn't see any library in town. How come Silverhill don't revert back to you?
Doesn't revert.
Well, how come?
They look at Ridgway.
Yeah, how come? I mean, why don't it revert back to me? It seems like the same law would apply.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
There's nothing ridiculous about it. If the deed restrictions have been violated, there's an automatic reversion to the grantor, or his heirs. You may just own the whole town of Silver Hill, Mr. Baxter, including his bank.
She raises her brow, and Ridgway glances at Jesse, who eyes him sternly. Ridgway breaks into a grin.
Well, now, Johnny, I see no reason why we can't work this out. You know, Ski Lodge may be the best thing that ever happened to Silver Hill. What would you need to put this place back into shape? Repairs, new furniture?
First-class double chair lift?
Ah, that's a good idea. Why don't we have lunch tomorrow and we can talk it over? Could I trouble you for a glass of water and an aspirin?
Oh, sure, Mr. Ridgway. Come with me.
He looks at Jesse.
I beg your pardon.
Ridgway follows Chris and Wally into the kitchen. Richard looks up at his dad.
Do we own the whole town of Silver Hill, Dad?
I don't think Mr. Ridgway wants to find out.
Good work, son.
They shake hands and hug.
Mrs. Baxter, I think we've got ourselves a real ski lodge.
He embraces Susie.
How'd you like to ski down our mountain?
I'd follow you anywhere, Mr. Baxter.
She fixes her eyes on him.
Ski down our mountain?
Later, they ski.
Good. Good. Oh. Very good.
Oh, Johnny. I'll never get the hang of it.
Sure you will, Susie. Look at the kids.
Chris and Wally ski up to them.
Looks good.
You two are doing fine. Let's see you turn.
Richard turns and stops.
That a way to go, Richard.
Oh, I don't know.
Susie, honey, you may not believe this, but I was no better than you are when I first started.
Yeah, it's really safe.
And you know me, Mom.
You can't live on a ski slope and not know how to ski. I guarantee you I'll have you skiing to the bottom of this hill in no time.
Jesse slides downhill in a bathtub, towing Stoutheart on a saucer.
Even Stoutheart and Jesse are getting into the spirit of things. Come here, Stoutheart. Come here, boy. Come on.
The big dog runs over.
Atta boy. Come on, come on. Come on here, boy. Atta boy stuff.
Stoutheart jumps up, pushing Johnny backward down the slope.
Yeah, Johnny! Oh. Yeah, Johnny!
Johnny bends down and stands back up as he gains speed. Susie skis after him.
Johnny!
Chris!
No! Dad!
Mr. Richard, fall down!
Johnny falls on his back in powdery snow. Susie plops next to him, and the kids ski over.
Are you all right, Johnny?
I'm fine. See, I told you I'd get you to the bottom of the hill in no time.
Johnny hugs Susie. Jesse slides downhill in the bathtub, and a title appears, The End. This film has been described by Deluxe, with funding by Walt Disney Studios. Voice by Jedediah Barton.